be. I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in the boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough to spread. It's just like the fella said. Tell me quick, ain't another kick in my head.
From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
If you get a moment, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website under Hot Stories, first of all. Take a look at the giant strawberry picture. This thing is huge. It's as big as your palm, and they're afraid to eat it in China because they think the thing might have all kinds of things going on in there. And then also look at the listener's email story. If you have the capability to take a look at video, take a look at the flying lawnmower. It is absolutely outrageous if you want to take a look at that on the coasttocoastam.com website. Our guest tonight, Randall Fitzgerald. We talk about luck. Here's one from Tony in Duluth, Minnesota. George, I've been a blackjack dealer. I could approach a table full of loud, happy players. Within 3 minutes, you could hear a pin drop. I don't know if this relates, but for 20-plus years, I've noticed that even streetlights go out when I come by. How about that? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Randall, the book, Lucky You, we talked about it a year ago. Where can you still get it?
Oh, it's still available, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble website. People can go to the Coast to Coast site and find a link that will take them direct. It's also available in bookstores.
Well, let's talk about this intuitiveness that is in us. Can you give us some story examples that have crossed your path?
Oh, sure. I've got many stories. You mentioned the email from the blackjack dealer.
Yeah.
Let's talk about poker for a moment. I've been doing a study of intuition in poker playing. I mean, how can we use intuition to uncover the hidden intentions of other people?
Interesting.
And when we do, sometimes we can generate good luck, or at the very least, we can avoid bad luck. So I started interviewing poker players about their intuition. And as you know, the game of poker is all about lying and bluffing. You know, if you can tell who is lying in the game, you win the money.
That's right.
So I read about a world champion poker player named Phil Hellmuth. He's won 9 world championship poker titles. Well, Hellmuth says he has very, very good intuition, and that has turned him into a millionaire. Hellmuth says, and I'm quoting, "Intuition springs from a combination of matters that you can understand and explain and others that you can't explain." Well, it's those aspects of intuition that he can't explain that really intrigue me. So I decided to go a step further. When you play poker in person with someone and sit across the table from them, sometimes you can pick up subtle cues and body language. But what about internet poker players? They play online without any visual cues whatsoever. So how do they use intuition? So I began interviewing some of the successful internet poker players that I had come across for my newsletter, The Science of Luck, and I found that the most successful were the most intuitive. One in particular, one player told me that intuition is a feeling awareness. You literally sense and feel the other person, even through the internet, and you begin to read that person. By no longer feeling like you are separate as an identity or an ego from that person or from anything. When you're in the flow of intuition, according to this person, you don't feel worry, you don't feel doubt, you don't feel any self-reproach. So think about in terms of how we can utilize that poker playing intuition in our dealings with other people, in our relationships. You know, it could have saved me a bad marriage if I'd been able to utilize it accurately in the very beginning of the relationship. In business arrangements, when we go into a business relationship, to be able to intuit the true intentions of another person can save us all a lot of pain and a lot of money.
Absolutely. But are most of these people born with this ability?
Well, some seem to be. You know, this particular fellow that I quoted, the internet poker player who, you know, in the course of an hour may win $2,000.
Or more.
He told me a story about how, I asked him, how did you first discover that you had intuition? When did it first come up for you? And he was describing how he was driving in Ohio, I believe it was Toledo, on a street, and he was going home. He'd just gotten out of the U.S. Army. He'd been in Vietnam. And so he's driving along, and he had a normal route that he took every day. And suddenly, he got this adrenaline charge and this thought that he shouldn't take that route, that he should make a quick left turn. He did. There were no other cars coming. He made a quick left turn. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, a car ran the red light.
Yep, same thing
and
happened.
And would have slammed right into
yep.
him if he hadn't have gotten that sudden urge to just turn. And he said, in that moment, I realized that intuition could save my life. It had saved my life in Vietnam, but I never realized it.
He didn't read himself, did he?
He didn't read himself. He wasn't really in touch with his body, for one thing. You know, he wasn't able to intuit the nature of the signals that his body was sending him. Well, in that moment where he avoided the car accident, he accurately intuited that some sort of avoidance action had to be taken.
See, I think these sensors that you were talking about last hour that are in our bodies even go probably beyond our bodies into these other dimensions. Whatever this universe is made of, Randall, and however we're all connected, and I'm sure we are, I think that those neurons, which may be invisible outside of the body, somehow connect. And I think it picks it up somehow. I don't know how.
Like a field of information.
Yeah, and it just comes into your system that way. You know, it's almost like a wireless computer picking up information. You know, you brings in the internet. You know, you can't see it. You wouldn't know it's there, but it sure is. Look at the information that is there on your screen. And I think there's something out there that if you really, and you're touching on it, but if people could understand how to use it, how to maximize it, take advantage of this, they could do incredible things.
Absolutely. Let me give you another quick example.
All right.
I decided, well, if it works in poker playing, then what about law enforcement? What about people in the law enforcement business? How do they use intuition? So I started interviewing a California highway patrolman. And in one of the local coffee shops in Northern California where I hang out, there was an officer, Dan Frederick, who came in. He's 30 years old. He'd been in the Marine Corps. And he suddenly realized that I was interested in intuition and I was interested in luck. And so was he, based on his personal experiences as a California highway patrolman. And he told me about how many times he has avoided danger and has saved his own life whenever he would have an intuitive hit that someone he had stopped had a weapon in the trunk of the car or under the seat. He would say, there was no reason for me to know this. There was nothing about the license plate that didn't come back as a stolen vehicle. There was nothing about the way the person was driving. He said, I would get out of my patrol car, I'd be walking toward this other vehicle, and suddenly the hair would stand up on the back of my neck. I would have this adrenaline charge, and I would know that I had to deal very carefully
right.
with this person. And he is the California Highway Patrolman with the most arrest in all of Northern California by virtue of using his intuition every day on the job.
That's something. And it's probably saved his life.
It has saved his life numerous times.
There's something there. There is. Now, how do you teach people who don't have it, Randall?
Here's what I've been exploring. on the website. Here are some of my observations. One is that we all have the capacity to tap into intuition. You know, it's there. It's part of our nature. I believe it's innate. And quite often we get so mental, we get caught up in our chain reactions of thoughts and trying to figure everything out and the whole rational left brain process, that we tend to blind ourselves to the sensory awareness potential that we all have. So I have 5 steps that I try to teach people.
5 steps.
The first step is learn to reach a relaxed state of mind in any situation. For instance, being in a noisy casino, you know, can you learn to go into a relaxed state of mind and block out all of this overstimulation?
Is this like meditation?
It can be a form of meditation. Certainly meditation helps train us to be able to do this willfully. You know, for some people, it's just a matter of learning how to relax. Many people are so stressed out that they've just never learned the trick, the knack for being able to relax in the moment, whatever they're doing.
And again, that's part of my blackjack example, where a guy's at a table, nervous, fidgety, upset, screaming at himself every time he gets a bad card. He hasn't learned how to relax.
Exactly.
Okay.
Step 2, learn to feel in your body where the symptoms of intuition that are unique to you are most often expressed. You know, for some people in the gut, for some people in the heart, you know, like this officer Frederick with the California Highway Patrol, you know, he had a synergy of 2 or 3 physical reactions that would occur that he knew he could put his life on the line with. And for some people, we have to experiment. You know, certainly I've had to experiment. And one of my experiments was, I've always been a very mental type of person, you know, really alive from the neck up and not necessarily from the shoulders down. So I had to go through a process about 4 years ago where I consciously went about trying to embody myself. I took a massage class. I learned how to do therapeutic massage. I've never practiced it, but I wanted to be in touch with not only my own body, but other people's bodies, just to have the sensory awareness. I started doing yoga. I got into yoga in as a physical act of trying to be embodied, to circumvent my mind. These practices, and it could be energetic dance, it could be movement, you know, whatever it is for mental type people, once you get embodied, then you become, as I have, more acutely aware of the symptoms in the body of the intuitive signals. Then step 3, learn to distinguish your intuitive voice from your habits of mind, especially the obsessive compulsive parts of ourselves.
Good point. And that's what I finally have mastered after all these years when I could not.
Once we master it, and I haven't completely mastered it myself, I mean, I'm an investigative reporter, so I sort of use myself as a guinea pig in life experiments. So I'm in the midst of lots of considerations and experiments about all of this.
How many years do you think you've been doing this now?
Well, I've been doing it actively for 4 years.
Okay.
And the connection to luck has been active for 3 years.
So you're relatively young in this field.
Yes, relatively young, and in a certain sense, like beginner's luck, I guess.
Yeah.
I've reached a stage where simply by osmosis, simply by interviewing other people who have mastered aspects of these steps and who have become successful and who utilize intuitive luck in their lives, simply through the process of being around these people and asking them questions, I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly picking up little techniques and little cues to use.
Isn't points 2 and 3, they're pretty similar, aren't they?
Pretty similar. But one is a feeling state, and step 3, learning to distinguish your intuitive voice from habits of mind, is about coming to know ourselves in a way that involves a lot of questioning.
Is that little voice we hear in our head? That goes,
yes, and it can even be a mindful practice, a mindfulness practice in the moment, where we ask, you know, I'm feeling this, you know, I'm feeling angry right now, but what am I really angry about? Am I really angry at my wife, or is there something else that I'm just in general angry about, and, you know, I'm just targeting her?
Right, taking it out on her.
Yeah. Once we begin that process of beginning to feel into and analyze what our true feelings are, then we begin to separate our habits of mind and the obsessive-compulsive thoughts from our true feeling states. Then step four, learn to channel intuition through feelings based on what you're most passionate about. I find, as a general rule, whatever gives you the biggest and most positive adrenaline charge in your life is what your intuition is going to be attracted to.
Interesting. Okay. It could be your job. People love their job.
It could be just, you know, having a curiosity about people.
Could be a hobby.
It could be a hobby, or it could be playing the lottery, or it could be the casino, or it could be a loved one. The circumstances where, when we get into the realm of premonitions and precognitive dreams, both aspects of which I believe are a part of the way that intuition is expressed, when we find mothers having intuitive hit that their child 3,000 miles away is in some trouble, and they call up their child, and sure enough, the child has just been in a car wreck or something of the sort.
Or a twin feels something.
Yes. You know, that is, I believe, an example of that feeling state connection, the positive adrenaline charge connected to emotion, where our intuition filters through it and becomes the channel that gives us information that, you know, can save lives. And then step five. Learn to create your own practical exercises to willfully inspire your access to intuition. And even if we can't make intuition willful, even if we can't summon it whenever we choose, we can learn to make it occur spontaneously with more frequency.
How do we do that?
I think that's what I'm doing. Now, I haven't mastered willfully being able to access intuition. I'm still working on that part. But I find, much like with synchronicities, you know, how when we're looking and we're scanning the event horizon for coincidences or those meaningful patterns of coincidences called synchronicities, how they begin to appear more often.
Maybe this is the phrase, Randall, where you just let it happen. Remember how we were talking about that?
Yes, you just release and you let it happen. And then we say to ourselves, aha, isn't that interesting? Rather than fixate on it and say, I've got to duplicate, I've got to replicate this, I need to be into the flow of this. And then suddenly we become so obsessive and possessive in the moment of that feeling state that we lose it.
Over what period of time can people do these five steps?
I think these five steps need to be done daily. Certainly they need to be done weekly in terms of at least having them on our mind.
It's almost like working out in a gym.
It is like working out in the gym. And intuitive luck, you know, intuition as a gift that all of us have the potential for is something precious that needs to be developed and worked on, like any skill, like any attribute. If we're going to perfect it, then we have to put attention on it, and we have to put caring around it.
How can they use it? Once they do this, these five steps, let's say, and they're pretty masterful with them, how can they use it to their own positive advantage?
Well, certainly it's positive whenever we're able to avoid danger. And certainly in relationships, it's positive when we're able to discern the true intentions and motives of another person that we're entering relationship, be it business or an intimate relationship with. You know, these are all positives. Let me give you a good example.
All right. I've
been studying Edgar Cayce. And Edgar Cayce, as most people know, was probably the 20th century's most famous intuitive.
I call him the American prophet.
Yes, we remember him as a medical intuitive because he'd go into those trance states to diagnose the illnesses of people he had never met in person. But what really sets Cayce apart was another use he made of intuition that isn't widely known. Cayce turned numerous people into multimillionaires. For instance, by intuiting in the 1920s where to drill for oil in Texas, he would intuit which stocks to invest in that would become profitable. There are two brothers in New York, Morton and Edwin Blumenthal, who put Casey on a retainer, a monthly retainer, to interpret their dreams. And from those interpretations of their dreams, allow them to pick profitable stocks. Well, it turned the Blumenthal brothers into multimillionaires. They were able to buy seats on the New York Stock Exchange at a cost of $500,000, which today would be about $5 million. Now, there are two aspects of Casey's career that I'd like to talk about when we come back really intrigue me.
And we'll also talk about premonitions and precognitive dreams. And then at the top of the hour, you can share some of your intuitive life stories with us. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast. Stay in.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com. Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, this is a neat night. Randall Fitzgerald, our guest, as we talk about luck and intuition. Talk about luck. You now get 14 issues for the price of 12 with the After Dark newsletter. And they are great color magazines, chock full of all kinds of information that you hear on Coast to Coast, but with a different spin. So call 1-888-727-5505. That's a toll-free number, 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online, safe and secure, coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back with our guest, Randall Fitzgerald. Randall, you were talking about the two aspects in this Edgar Casey episode.
Yes. One in particular has to do with the trance states that Casey would enter in order to access his intuition and give the readings, especially the medical readings that he gave. It's really a form of channeling. He would go into the trance and get his mind out of the way, get his ego out of the way, much like he's called the sleeping prophet. In a certain sense, you know, he was sleeping. He went into a sort of dream state, but he was still conscious enough to be able to give a reading, and usually they were quite accurate readings, about people he had never met. And that is also how he gave readings on where to drill for oil, where to find buried treasure, which stocks to invest in. It was as if in the trance state that he tapped into that field of information that we keep talking about. Now, the second thing that really intrigues me about Casey has to do with the subject of greed and whether greed short-circuits intuitive luck. Casey never personally made a fortune from his intuitive gifts. To the contrary, he lived a very modest life until his death in 1944.
And you know what? It could have killed him because he was exhausted, sickly, and he continued giving these trance-like readings.
Yes. He believed in using his gift to help other people become healthy or become wealthy. And it was his religious upbringing that had instilled in him a fear that if he got greedy, he would be violating a spiritual law, and that would diminish his access to intuition. So that's the intersection between intuition, luck, and our belief systems. Now, maybe it was that belief alone that kept him from personally attracting wealth with his talent.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we'll never know. I mean, we each have to determine for ourselves if our intentions are pure. If we're going to use intuition to better ourselves financially, can we do so without also tripping over our own conscious and unconscious ingrained belief patterns and attitudes about whether we're worthy, whether or not greed should play a role, any religious intolerance that we might have for speculation in the stock market or gambling, whatever it might be, we have to be hyper aware of where we can trip ourselves up.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And Casey, one of my favorite prophets, you know, took it to his death, but some of his readings, I've got a couple books of his, Randall, and I mean, he's just a lot of the things that he talked about 40 years ago, you know, scientists are beginning to say, hey, let's do this, let's do that. And he was right. He was right on the money.
Extraordinary human being. I feel like Edgar Casey is an example, a prototype of the potential that we all have. And Casey believed that too in his life. He believed that we all have the potential for accessing intuition at its deepest levels. But we all have to find our own path. We all have to find our own way.
What's the difference between premonition and intuition?
A premonition is a waking state, intuitive feeling about the future that comes true. Precognition is in the dream state, in which intuition also works. Intuition works through our unconscious mind in the dream state and sometimes gives us glimpses of the future. And I have a story in that regard, a personal story, if you'd like to hear it.
I would love to hear it.
I was doing a series of profiles of very lucky people for my newsletter, The Science of Luck. And one of these people is a fellow in Austin, Texas, named Andy. Now, Andy had taken some dream courses in the early 1990s at the University of Texas. He was very interested in his dreams, and he started doing lucid dreaming. He was interested in sports, so he decided to do a marriage between lucid dreaming and sports betting. So he would go into these lucid dream states and make predictions for the coming weekend's professional football or basketball games or college football games. Well, Andy was able to retire from the computer business based on his winnings. He became extraordinarily accurate at being able to sense the winners of sporting events, and he would make thousands of dollars every weekend. So I had heard about this guy, and I knew that he was well known in Las Vegas among bookies. So Andy and I struck up a conversation and a relationship, and he agreed to meet with me. So we met up in Las Vegas, and I watched Andy use his technique on the craps tables. He would incubate dreams the night before, and then he would write them all out in his computer and get this computer printout, and then he would go to particular casinos in Las Vegas, to particular tables, particular craps tables, and I watched over a 3 or 4 day period as he played. And he had some extraordinary streaks of luck. And for Andy, it had become second nature. Well, I was intrigued by this. And I thought, I wonder if I can do this myself.
Yeah.
So I drove back home to Northern California, and I decided to try my own little technique. So every night as I drifted off to sleep, I decided I would try to program and into a precognitive dream by using a mantra. And here was my mantra. I said to myself as I drifted off to sleep over and over again, please give me a precognitive dream about winning or making money. Please give me a precognitive dream about winning or making money. So 6 nights go by, and I didn't have any dream memories that surfaced that felt in any way connected to the future. You know, I had the usual psychological dreams. On the 7th night, however, sometime in the early morning hours of Monday, September the 15th, a vivid dream image shocked me awake. I clearly saw in this image three diamond symbols on the pay line of a dollar slot machine at an Indian casino. It was just a single, simple image, yet it was really clear, sharp, and it jolted me awake. And it felt precognitive.
You say, hallelujah, I found one, huh?
So, but there were no other details. I mean, there was no detail about the timing as to when this was going to take place. There was no firm information about the setting, but I knew that it was precognitive. So I called a friend of mine, Donald Altman, in Portland, Oregon. He's a former Buddhist monk. He's written a number of books on Buddhism. And I said, Donald, I've had this dream. I want you to document it. Will you put together an affidavit testifying that I've had this dream image and that I believe it's precognitive? He agreed to do that. He put together a legal document. So then the next part of this was, when was it going to happen? When were these diamond symbols on the pay line of a slot machine going to happen? And I knew I would have to rely on intuition. So each day, for the next 3 days, I just felt into my body and felt whether or not there was an intuitive signal there. 3 days went by, nothing happened. And then suddenly, I felt it on the third day. It was just a sense like an energetic blockage had been removed. And it was a feeling that it was time to go to a particular Indian casino. I had one in mind. So I drove to the casino. I found a double diamond, as they're called, dollar slot machine. I sat down at it. I immediately started winning. $120 on the second button push, then $30. And finally I had $400 in credits, and I felt certain that this machine was going to make my dream come true.
There was more, right?
There was more. I glanced at my watch. It was 5 p.m. I pushed the play button. The symbols on the three reels whirled, and three double diamond symbols froze on the pay line for a payout, the maximum payout, of $1,600 on this machine. And I thought to myself, aha, the dream has come true.
The mother load.
this is not the end of it. So it was the end of the day. I couldn't deposit the money in the bank. So I said, oh, the next morning I'll just drive to my bank and deposit the money. So the next morning I'm driving to my bank, and suddenly I realized that in the precognitive dream image, I couldn't tell whether it was a double or triple diamond symbol. I didn't know.
Is it just coming back to you?
Well, all along I'd been uncertain. And in fact, Donald has it in his affidavit that
right.
I was uncertain as to whether it was a double or triple diamond. So I do a U-turn. Instead of going to my bank, I go straight to that Indian casino.
With the cash in your hand, right?
I walk through the casino, and I look for a triple diamond dollar slot machine. The first one I see, which was by the door, I walk over to it. I put in some money. I press the play button, and I swear, on the first play, three triple diamond symbols settled on the pay line for a $2,500 jackpot.
I love it. I love it.
So I had incubated a precognitive dream, not knowing what I was doing. The first time I had ever tried, it took, you know, 7 nights, but then I had covered myself as well. I had an affidavit from a well-known fellow who covered me at one end, you know, in terms of, you know, a scientific experiment,
sure.
Being able to, you know, double-blind it. And then I had the documents from the casino that are given out for the IRS, giving the amount, the time, the machine, all of the information I needed. So I was able to demonstrate to my satisfaction that it's possible to incubate a precognitive dream that will financially benefit us.
How can you explain it?
I started looking for a logical explanation immediately. I mean, you know, the
maybe there isn't
any. Skeptic in me, you know, from my own programming of having been a journalist for 30 years, came up, and you know, I started looking at it, and I thought I've got to be a hardened skeptic here and try to examine this. But here's what came to me: try as I might, the sequence of events defied classification as an ordinary streak or even an extraordinary streak of luck. You know, first, I had set an intention to have a dream that would result in winning money. Secondly, I subsequently had a specific dream image, a prediction, that I relayed to another person who drew up an affidavit. Third, the triple diamond jackpot came on the first play push I made on the first triple diamond machine that I played that day. And fourth, never before in my life had I won a double or triple diamond slot machine jackpot until that week after my dream. It was the only time before and the only time since.
What do you say about people who are having precognitive dreams, but they're not all dreams of riches and fame? They're dreams of tsunamis,
yes,
and planes smashing,
yes,
into buildings and things like that.
The British scientist J.B. Priestley did a survey some years ago of about 1,000 people who had claimed to have had precognitive dream experiences. And he found that about half of those dreams concerned a warning of tragedy. These were emotionally wrenching events that seemed to send out the strongest signals. In connection with the tsunamis, I started doing research because there were all of the stories about the animals that, you know, hours before the waves hit had been fleeing from the beach areas, going inland, you know, and people speculated, well, there was some animal intuition at work. You know, they had some radar guidance system. Well, I discovered in some newspapers in India stories about some of the very so-called primitive tribes that live on islands off the coast of India. These are tribes that don't want any contact with Western civilization. That many of these tribal members had also fled inland, not only hours, but days before the tsunami hit.
I guess they didn't warn anybody, huh?
They didn't warn anyone because, again, they didn't want contact with Western civilization. But a number of anthropologists were concerned about the fate of these tribes, so they flew over the areas in helicopters trying to find out what happened to them and discovered that entire villages had uprooted themselves because they had had some collective vision or collective intuition that some sort of tragedy was about to happen.
That is something. And again, my theory, it's this wireless matrix. You're tapped into it. You just need to put what you've said, and that's the ability to read these things. And that, I think, Randall, is the most important thing, to be able to understand it and to read it. When we open up the phone lines next hour, I'm sure we're going to get stories from people who didn't read their intuition.
Yes.
And things have happened.
You I've had that experience myself.
The person who said, don't go through the intersection, but he did and got hit. And,
yeah,
and maybe miraculously he's still alive. I wouldn't mind getting some of those stories as well.
Now, I look forward to those.
What's going on with this bestseller, Blink, by the way? I hear that's about intuition.
It is about intuition. You know, Malcolm Gladwell, I read the book, and I must confess that I wasn't particularly impressed by it. You know, he takes a very standard approach to what intuition is. But there are lots of questions that are hanging. You know, he talks in terms of art experts being able to tell at a glance that a particular ancient piece of work is really a fraud, a fake, and in so doing, overrule months of scientific study that validated it. He talks in terms of other areas, other professions, where people are able to make snap judgments and make decisions in an instant that are very accurate. Just a tiny slice of information was all they had to make very accurate judgments. So this sort of thin slicing and the adaptive unconscious, which is how he labels intuition, I agree with all of that. I do believe that's part of the intuitive framework. But again, I'm more interested in those deeper, more unexplainable levels of intuition.
Well, I tell you one thing. When you can put it all together, you're going to have one heck of a person who can read those hunches, know how to react. Maybe Bill Gates is that way. I bet he is.
I wonder. I used to, at one time back in the 80s, I was working on a presidential commission report, and the fellow who was head of the commission was J. Peter Grace, who was chairman, CEO of W.R. Grace & Company.
Right.
Well, Grace, in my interactions with him, always used to tell people, I do everything by the gut hunch, always have in my life. And it had turned him into a Fortune 500 CEO. He operated on his gut hunches about everything, about relationships with people, about business decisions. You know, he would look at the bottom line. He would look at all of the numbers. He would listen to all of the advice from the experts. But ultimately, what swayed him most was what his gut told him.
I think so, too. I think so. I come back to where a lot of people have done this since they were infants, I bet. Little kids.
Yes. Yes. Somehow, there's a childlike wonder that we lose as we get older. You know, and that's tapped into beginner's luck, too. You know, children have a lot of beginner's luck. They have those qualities. And the more childlike we can be with that sense of wonder, I believe the more beginner's luck we will have and the more we'll be able to replicate it again and again intuitively.
I think so, too. Well, I tell you what we'll do. At the top of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines. If you have questions for Randall Fitzgerald, go ahead and do that. But if you want to share some of your intuitive stories that you've had, go ahead and do that. Maybe some of your precognitive dreams, you may want to go ahead and do that. Do you find with these dreams, Randall, assuming they're correct, how long does it take before the episode occurs? A week, a month, 10
well,
years?
Well, in my case, it was a week, and you know that's the big precognitive dream that I've had so far in my life. It's almost like I have some concern about going back there right now and trying to incubate something similar. It's almost like, you know, how do I top that? You know, there's this feeling that I need to know more about intuition and how it works within my own body before I go back to that place.
Okay, well, get ready. Phone lines are open, and we'll be right back. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.